This is a podcast from Minute Media. This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch. Claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain it, what I'm feeling right now, guys. Let's open up that rave line. Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USC has escaped the Groundhog Day existence and has ended the Helton era.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Random Drive Radio. This is the CarCast after USC's 31-16 loss to the Notre Dame Fighting Irish at Notre Dame Stadium in South Bend. We're going to look back at the game, give you our reaction, and so much more. As always, you can follow us on Twitter, at Random Troy. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Random Troy. I'm your host, Michael Castillo, joined along with my co-host here in the Random Troy studio in Los Angeles, Alicia Daratola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. We're back. The bye week is over. USC has finished the bye week, gotten through it, and then have bounced back here for week 8. Game 7 in week 8 is a loss to Notre Dame, 31-16. Trojans are now 3-4. They need to go 3-2 in their last three games. In the last five games to become bowl eligible. But it's been a bye week, first and foremost. That has been rough for you and I for multiple reasons. And I'm so... Do you want to talk about this stuff at the beginning or the end?
I don't really care to talk about this football team, so let's talk about this stuff now.
Okay. All right, sure. Where do we begin? You have been sick.
We begin on my 32nd birthday.
Yeah, and then like...
And ever since, literally ever since I turned 32, the 32nd year of my life has been, or is it my 33rd year of my life? Am I in the 33rd year?
I think you're technically in the
33rd. Okay, the 33rd year of my life has had a rough start. Almost immediately after my birthday, I came down sick with the flu. I got sick, and then I inevitably gave it to you.
Yeah, of course.
And then somewhere along the way of that, it was like a week and a half of being with the flu.
Well, it was sick for a long time. Like you were sick for like 3 weeks. Well, I think, for like 2.5.
I think the first week and a half was the flu. And then I think we got an infection, one of those, not strep, but something of that nature. We both ended up on antibiotics to deal with that. And then my family, this is as we're coming out of that that situation for two and a half weeks of not being in a good place health wise. My family got hit with a very, very vicious stomach bug, and I was the first to get said stomach bug, and it was horrendous. And then you got the stomach bug, and you didn't have it as hard as I did, but you still have had it pretty rough the last few days. And yeah, that was the story of our bye week. I think it sucks because like we were both excited about the bye week because we were finally going to do...
We had content planned.
We had prepared this giant spreadsheet full of information about the coaches that USC could look to hire, all the coaching candidates. We were going to do this big mega episode running down all of those coaches. And then my throat basically gave out, your throat gave out, so we couldn't record. And then during the bye week, I was sick again, and so we couldn't record. And coming out of the bye week, Notre Dame week, I was sick again, and so we couldn't record. You were sick. So it's just a whole confluence of things.
Yeah.
And
it's frustrating. 2 years in a row.
We've essentially lost a month of like podcasting.
Yes.
Because we've been sick. Now, last year it was COVID and we were hit pretty hard by COVID. And that's thankfully not what this was. But, you know, still, if you get hit by the flu and you get hit by a stomach virus and you get hit by, you know, like a sinus infection or something like that, there's nothing you can do. And unfortunately, that's sort of where we've been at for the last few weeks. On the plus side, this football team is horrendous. And if we were ever going to miss time and be able to not speak about this football team, this is the stretch, I think. Am I fair to say that?
I don't think you're wrong.
I have some thoughts, not about this game, because this game was, for me, completely and utterly irrelevant, except for the embarrassment that this team has continued to stretch out over multiple weeks. To come out of a bye week and perform like that, I mean, I know you were facing a ranked Notre Dame team, but this Notre Dame team has been ripe for the picking by everyone they face. Yeah. So USC really shouldn't. USC should have been in this game than they were.
I do want to talk about the game because I have opinions. I have thoughts there.
We can talk about the game.
Yeah.
I just want to gauge where we're at as far as I did not care about this game. Like it was practically like, you know, pulling teeth to watch the game. I spent long sections of the game playing with my nephew. Like he was over at the apartment and I was, you know, tossing a ball around with him, my 18-month-old nephew. So like that was more interesting to me than watching USC play football. And every moment that I sat down to watch USC play football, I would have rather been playing with my nephew. So like that's where I'm at, is that this team is horrendous to watch, with the exception, there are 2.5 exceptions to me. The first exception is Drake London, who is truly head and shoulders above any other person wearing Cardinal and gold right now.
Yep.
It's not close. He is rising up the ranks of USC receivers. And part of that might be just how horrendous the rest of the team looks by comparison, but he is genuinely that good. Number two, Keonta Ingram, I think, is an excellent running back. And it's a shame that he transfers to USC to be part of this team. And the half is Caleb Bullock. I think he is the only person on defense that I think looks like he has anything going for him.
Yeah, it's hard to argue about the defense. I mean, I think you can absolutely make a case that Chris Steele had the best game of his season tonight.
I think Chris Steele is an interesting person to bring up because I agree. I thought Chris Steele played very well. He had some very good moments. He has the interception.
Right.
He has a couple pass breakups, some good defending.
Especially early on, yeah.
But he also has the pass interference on the most important drive of the season so far. And that's sort of an example of the sort of perception that you come out of this game thinking like USC was talented enough to make this an actual game, but they made those critical errors.
Right.
And those are why USC did not make this a game.
Right. Yeah. And I am sympathetic to the idea that it's difficult to really properly rate a cornerback.
Oh, absolutely.
Because the highlights, you don't necessarily see the great plays usually don't end up on highlight.
The best corners, because you don't want to, the best corners are often the guys you don't see because the ball's never going their way.
Right. Yeah. And then, it's one of those things where, you know, you can make 8 pass deflections in a row, but if you get burned once, then you're terrible. Right. So, I do have some sympathy in that sense. So, but having said that, I think that Chris Steele made his fair share of big plays, which is something you can't really say about most of the defense, right? And that's not me like banging on all the defensive players. That's just this defense has not, as a collective unit, as an idea, as an entity, as a being, has not been there. They just have not been there. Since, you know, the first week of the season. And it's difficult to put it all together because the words all together, because going into the season, we thought that the defense was going to be significantly better. Yes, they lose Talanoa Hufanga, but, you know, everywhere else they should be pretty stout. We had probably too much trust in the defensive line and didn't put enough stock into the idea that, well, Brandon Peely up front, him not being there, and Marlon Tuipulotu not being there is a big deal. And yes, SC has absolutely lost a lot by not having those two guys up front. That hurts, and SC has had no answer, and Sopcich not being there until tonight has been a problem. And everything else has just been abysmal with this defense. They were supposed to be a much better unit, and they haven't been. And on offense, everything has just looked broken. And I think this it's interesting about this game for me is that I think what makes USC frustrating is that I think it would be easier. It would be easier to watch if this team didn't gain any yards.
They gained so many damn yards.
If Slovis threw 84 interceptions, if they fumbled the ball on every time they got it, if they went three and out on every drive, but they don't do those things. Sometimes it looks really hard and it doesn't look easy, but what they're going to do is they're going to string together about five first downs on a drive and then things go to hell. And it's like, I was looking up the stats just now on my phone. Keontae Ingram has 24 carries for 138 yards. Like, if you would have had me guess what his output was just watching that game and not necessarily tracking the numbers, I don't know that I would have pegged it. But yet, yeah, he was successful on the ground. We've talked about the offensive line in the past. I think this offensive line is better than our expectations, because our expectations were very low.
Let's be honest. This team is equipped to run the ball. And this team can run the ball.
And the offensive line is not as terrible. We thought that the offensive line would be terrible. They're not. They're fine. They could absolutely be getting more out of this team. And yet it's a situation where everything is Drake London or bust. Keaton Slovis is, you know, you look at tonight's film and then you compare it to where he was 2 years ago against Notre Dame, which I thought was his best game that he's ever played. If you watch those two things, it's mind-boggling to say that one was him as a true freshman and one was him in year three in the offense.
He's
right?
Completely devoid of confidence.
Yes.
Completely devoid of confidence, and USC does nothing to help him with that.
And that's the part that frustrates me more than anything. And I know that on Twitter, people have gotten frustrated with saying that we're not critical of Keaton Slovis enough. And like, to me, okay, if a guy is clearly having some issues with confidence at quarterback, then it is absolutely 100% on the coaching staff to mitigate that.
Yes.
Put your players in position to succeed. If they're not, then figure out a way to get them in a position to succeed somehow.
Figure out what Keaton Slovis's bread and butter is and let him just do that and run the ball.
And
if you need to give him time away, if you need to give him time off from processing the game, then run the ball, because you can run the ball.
And this game was a prime example of they were getting the pass protection was quintessentially.
It was a 3 second pass defense.
It wasn't 1,000, 2,000, 3,000.
Most of the plays that time was there.
Yes. They were not giving Keaton Slovis a million seconds to throw, but there was more than enough time to get the ball out. And yet so many times SC would go back to pass. I mean, Slovis would go back to pass and they'd be these long, you know, developing plays. And it's like, why? You know that these things are not working. You know that having Keaton Slovis go through all his progressions because of the coverages that Notre Dame is throwing at you, because of the offensive line giving you some time but not a million seconds of time, and all these different factors, and because you have a wide receiver core that is Drake London and a bunch of other guys, and not to like bash on the other receivers, but more so because this is not the right receiver core we've seen in the last few years. And I always thought that Notre Dame game was prime example from 2 years ago, where Notre Dame said, we're gonna take away Michael Pittman, and we're gonna let Amon-Ra and Tyler Vaughns kill us. They had to pick your poison.
Well, and
when you have three great receivers, you force teams to do that. SC doesn't have that luxury right now, but yet they're still somehow able to get Drake London 15 catches.
20 targets, 15 catches,
right.
170 odd yards or whatever, and he probably should have had more, because at a certain point you should just be chucking it his way. But like, one of the differences here is that you don't have a rapport with the quarterback. You've basically rebuilt your receiving core so that Drake London is the safety blanket. And Keaton Slovis doesn't have the depth of a relationship that he had with Amon-Ra or Tyler Vaughns, with Taj Washington or Katie Nixon or any of those other guys. So, you know, there's a reason why his targets generally go towards Drake London, Gary Bryan Jr., and increasingly Malcolm Epps. So, you know, aside from that, you don't have the core that you had in the past. So work with what you have. Work with what you're... Stop running plays where you need 5/1,000ths of time in order to get the ball out. You have 3 seconds. Every single play should be designed around, if we can't get the ball out in 3 seconds, then it's not a play we're going to run, because that's what your freshman tackles are allowing. Allowing work with what you have. USC is not working with what they have. They're not making life easy on themselves. And it is incredibly frustrating to see a team that can run the ball, that does have a great wide receiver, that does have a capable quarterback, be so incapable of scoring. You know, USC's defense has a ton of problems. The defense is a mess. I'm not going to argue anything different. I turned to you during the game and I said, is this the Todd Orlando experience in year two? Because that's what the word on Todd Orlando was, something about, you know, the second, your first year he does well and then people figure him out or something like that in year two, whatever it is. This is the Todd Orlando in experience. But let's be real. This USC offense should never be settling for 16 points.
No.
Or the point totals that they've accepted the entire damn season. Why can't USC beat Notre Dame 32-31? Why can't USC do that?
Well, especially in a game like this where, and I put on Twitter, I said it would be irresponsible to say that SC should have won this game. You know, you look at the score, they lost by 16 points.
They didn't
points.
Deserve to win, for sure.
Notre Dame is a flawed team. I don't think they're not nearly as good as they've been in the last few years, but certainly, you know, a worthy opponent, especially on the road at South Bend. That's never easy. All those kind of things, right? And you look at the season SC has had. It would be irresponsible to say that SC should have won the game,
but they could have.
Look at the way the game that played out. Notre Dame leaves so many points on the field.
Notre Dame is such a flawed team.
They left 11 points on the board in the first quarter alone, essentially, settling for a field goal and a missed field goal that they should have gotten early on. And then SC essentially does the same thing to cancel out all the benefit that they could have gotten from that. You know, we talk about the missed opportunities. I think the biggest areas to circle are before the half and after the half. The book ending drives to halves. I am someone who always puts a big focus on those two drives. I think those two drives, for the most part, define a football game. The drive before and after the half. And SC comes down and has an opportunity to score going into the half, down 17-3, and you score, and, you know,
it changes the game.
It completely changes the
game.
It's
one of those
halftimes.
If you
score a touchdown, you feel good about yourself going into halftime.
It's one of those halftimes where you go in and you say, man, that was a really bad half, but we're only down by
a touchdown. We're only down 7, and we're getting the ball?
Yeah, like, and we're getting the ball.
Hell,
like,
yeah.
It's totally wiped the slate clean.
You're
yeah.
feeling super good. And that 7-point deficit feels like it's a tie game.
Yeah.
You can mentally talk yourself into that, right?
Yeah.
You can feel good about it. And yet it's 17-3, and SC does this thing that they do just about every game, where they waste the timeouts trying to get the other team to jump offside, which is, by the way, my least favorite reason to call a timeout. Drives me insane. I think it's a waste of a play. The hard counts and stuff, those things almost never work.
Ever.
Just, it's a waste of a timeout. Don't do it.
Yeah.
Anyways, but they come down the field. They have the ball with 30 seconds to go at like the 40, and they're running the ball. Running the ball.
And even that run, they get yards, whatever. They still, like, even when you run that ball, you still have an opportunity to clock it and set yourself up. Like, there are 5 different things USC could do different there, and the result is better.
I'm okay with running the ball there if the box counts right, and if you've got a timeout in the bag,
you have a plan that when you run the ball, you then know exactly what the next play is going to be.
You know exactly what the next play is. If it was a look that you're like, oh, if they give us this weird look, we're going to actually weirdly run the ball and catch them off guard. You know, that's what Oklahoma did to win the Red River shootout this year, right? Like, if you did something like that, where it felt kind of, you know, lack of a better word, smart, like it felt like it was thought out, I'm kind of for it. But when you do it, when you have no timeouts and it feels like you're running to run for no reason and like you're settling up for a field goal when, yeah, a field goal would be fine there, but that's not what you ideally want. You're down by 14. You might as well try to get the 7. And then the play after that, Keaton Slovis gets a little too quick on the trigger to run. He has a shot down deep. That he doesn't London. Take with Drake London. I know a lot of people are critical of that. Yeah, I think he could have thrown it, absolutely.
I also think the pocket was collapsing and he was taking off running.
But for me, the last thing he should have done is run there.
But if you're going to run, if you're going to run, you should be able to immediately stand up and snap that ball immediately.
Yes.
Like, it took them 5 seconds to just get lined up and then...
Right, and then the
clock's ticking, and
they go to spike it, and it's like they've never practiced the spike before. Like, I am very sympathetic to the idea of not taking, you know, the under center thing. We've talked about it before. I'm someone who doesn't care about the under center thing. If that's not your offense, that's not your offense. Whatever, do what's good for you and do what works for you. If it works, it works. If not, then figure out a better way to make it work. But I don't know what reason do you have to have a situation where have you literally never practiced
the spike?
A spike? Like, shouldn't the 2-minute drill be part of your practice?
Yeah.
Like, I just can't fathom it.
No.
That's the one that makes no sense to me.
And
you know, that's on Graham Harrell.
It speaks to the entire dysfunction of this team from top to bottom. It just
and it's an opportunity to get points to go into the half and feel good, and then they don't do it.
Instead, you go into the half feeling like, wow, we left points on the board, and then you come out in the second half and
points on the field. See,
on the field. Yeah,
you get it wrong too. I got corrected on Twitter tonight about it. I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. I always say points on the board. It's points on the field.
Yeah.
Whatever. The point is, SD goes in the break, down 17-3. They come out, and here they go with a nice drive, throws downfield to Malcolm Epps. He catches one, makes a great catch.
Love that play.
Early on, and then they go to him again on a third and long, and he can't get it. They look like there's going to be targeting to bail SC out at the goal line. Wasn't.
Which, personally, I prefer players not to get ejected in that situation.
Yeah.
I do think he was late, and he hit the it was helmet. So, like, to me, that should be a flag, but also that's USC getting bailed out because the play clearly didn't work. Like, you shouldn't have to rely on Notre Dame having that kind of play.
Yeah, and SC settles for the field goal, and Parker Lewis misses it. One of a couple of big misses he had tonight, along with an extra point.
If Parker Lewis hits his field goals, and I'm not saying that I mean, hashtag college kickers exists for a reason.
Sure.
But also, like, you need your kicker to make those kicks, because the game is completely different. But
I'm also going to say,
you shouldn't come down to the damn field goals. You shouldn't be kicking field goals, because you should be getting into the damn end zone.
And how many times did he make all those kicks at the early part of the year when he was being relied on every single drive? Like, he was due to miss a couple of kicks. Like, that's just what kickers are. Like, they miss sometimes. I'm sorry, they do. Yeah. And so, like, I mean, they were ill-timed, 100%.
Yeah.
But you shouldn't be if you have to rely on those things every single week.
This team
then is you got problems.
This team has too many offensive weapons to not be getting into the end zone with the way that they move 100%. The ball. Because you see the way they move, they outgain Notre Dame in this game. You can't have that kind of stuff happen, but it adds up. So if it was just that USC was playing well and then it came down to the kicker missing a kick, you get on the kicker. But USC didn't play well on defense. They didn't finish on offense. They had miscues left and right across the board, like they have all season. So it still comes down to it being a team loss. And that's the frustrating thing is, like, I don't think you fix things. I don't know how to fix this. This is part of why I feel like I'm checking out of this season, because I don't see where you fix this. We can sit here and say, play all the kids, play all the young guys, but that doesn't fix things. You're still going to have all of these growing pains and mistakes because it's still the same people governing the scheme. It's still the same coaching, all
that. The thing that I would say is the, you know, play the young guys thing, you can't expect better results with that sort of thing.
No.
And I feel like a lot of people do.
My only exception to that.
And they, no, I think that realistically, yeah, you, if in a perfect world, this was like a video game. Yeah, you play all the younger guys, get them all the XP and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if it's better or not. At least you're developing guys. And I think that if that was like pro sports or like a video game, yes, I agree. That would be the ultimate better scenario. That's just not the way it works. It's not. And this coaching staff has no reason to worry about next year. Like, I know that, yes, you know, like, they're not looking at these players as in they need to develop them for next year, because for this coaching staff, there
but
is no next year.
But it shouldn't, it doesn't have to be about development to say play the young kids, because I've seen the veterans, it's the warts of the veterans that I'm sick and tired of seeing all the same. That's the argument to say, give somebody else a chance who hasn't had a chance and see what they're made of when they get out on the field.
Right.
I think but I think we saw a lot of that in this game. I think we saw USC go out and give Prophet Brown some snaps, and we saw Shropshire and a couple of those guys out. Like, on defense, I felt like they were giving guys
a chance.
And again, like I said, I came away thinking only Kalen Bullock is the guy that I like. If I had to wipe the slate clean of literally everyone on the defense, the only one I wouldn't throw out at this point, and it's not like he's perfect, but I just feel like he's the only one that I see out there actually tackling in a manner that makes me think that he has learned how to tackle, is Kalen Bullock. So, like, that's the thing, is that I don't think there's a fix in that sense. I think the only area where you can actually say just play the young kid is Jackson Dart. And it's not because he's a better quarterback than Keaton Slovis, because he has a different skill set than Keaton Slovis, because he can scramble and Keaton can't. That is literally the only reason to do that, because maybe stylistically he makes a difference in this offense. Otherwise, I don't know. It's all a crapshoot. The season's going to go the way it's going to go.
Yeah, and like we've said before, I do not think that you need a running quarterback to succeed in this offense. I think you need a running quarterback to succeed in this offense when you're not making the adjustments to put your quarterback in a position to succeed.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Which is, but, and here's
my... Because, like, if you're going to be stubborn enough to not try to help out your quarterback...
Right, but we're in week eight. We're in week eight. So they clearly are stubborn enough to not try to help their quarterback out. So, like, yes, USC does need an improvisational quarterback who does something different. That's...
Right, yeah.
That's the fact.
I'm in agreement.
It's just, it's very frustrating because it shouldn't have to be that way.
Yeah.
I'd also just caution people about, you know, college football in general and this idea of, like, the savior backup quarterback, because you see teams like Oklahoma bench Spencer Rattler, who I've never been really convinced by, but they bring in Caleb Williams as the backup, and he's supposed to be the savior, and suddenly all of Oklahoma's problems are solved. And yet they come out against Kansas today and look exactly as bad as they'd had before.
But by the way,
because it's a team problem.
But I just want to chime in that's also another key example of, I know, and I know that I need to stop making these little weird dumb arguments at this point, because Clay Helton's no longer here. But one of the things that people love to talk about, how Clay Helton was like the only coach in America that would still be with Keaton Slovis over Dart or whatever.
You know
what I mean? And obviously he didn't have, that wasn't a Helton thing this year, because Dart played after Helton was already gone. But, you know, we saw it with Dart and Daniels and Fink and all that stuff before, all stemming back from Darnold and Brown. And it's like, no, Lincoln Riley just had this thing with Spencer Rattler and Caleb Williams. Like, every coach has a situation where you have a quarterback that you're committed to. And at some point, you got to decide when to pull the trigger. And sometimes it's going to end up being too late, and sometimes it's not. But literally every coach has dealt with those things before. It's not solely a Clay Helton thing, right? Like, it's not solely a USC thing. I think what USC's problem, and that has been solely a USC thing, has been the lack of development from quarterbacks from year to year. And how you, like I said, you go back and you watch 2019 Keen Slovis at Notre Dame, and you're like, God damn, this quarterback, he was a three-star? Like, how good is he going to be in 2 years, in year three of this offense? And then you fast forward it to now, and you're like, well, he looks like he's like regressed a little bit, and the offense definitely doesn't look better. And like, this can't be, you are you sure that these videos are lined up? Because they look like they should be inverted, right? Like, it looks like his freshman year tape should be his junior year tape.
This
his
is also
year tape should be his freshman year tape.
This is also the stuff that people say about Lincoln Riley and Spencer Radler. And Lincoln Riley is considered one of the better head coaches in the country.
Right.
So, like, again, these things are not unique. I think part of the problem is you just get very sucked into your own team, so you don't realize that literally everyone else in the country is complaining about the same problems.
Look at David Shaw.
But it's very frustrating. It's very frustrating to watch USC. It's not that USC plays bad football, which they do their share of that, to be sure. It's that this USC team lacks a certain amount of fight that I have come to recognize from USC teams, even the bad ones. And here's where...
Even the bad ones, right?
Here's like, where the Shalicia is going to come in.
Oh, dear.
Here's where it's going to come in. I have often said that I do not think that Clay Helton was the person to take USC to the top of the mountaintop. But I also think that Clay Helton clearly was a good enough head coach to make USC not completely fall off a cliff every single year. And the one time that they did fall off a cliff in 2008... In 2018, they generally lost games still close. They weren't getting blown out. They weren't getting
They were
spanked.
All games late in the fourth quarter.
They were all games late all in the fourth quarter. They didn't look pretty, but they were in them. And this is where I think I point out, and I'm not saying that Clay Helton should still be USC's coach, because I have said for several years now that he shouldn't have been. But this is what we are seeing right now is what USC looks like without Clay Helton.
Okay, no, I have...
So,
okay,
like...
Hold on.
I just like to say that clearly...
A good follow-up here.
Clearly something about Clay Helton, man management and all that kind of stuff, he was good at something.
Okay.
This is my caution about what expectations about new hires, different hires, all that kind of stuff. I have said from the beginning, it can be worse than Clay Helton. That's what people didn't want to acknowledge, that it could get worse than Clay Helton. This is... what worse than Clay Helton looks like.
Okay. I am not going to do the thing where I'm like, okay, Alicia, you're saying, yay, he kept it close against a bad Cal team. No, that's not what I'm saying. What I am going to say is, genuinely I'm asking this. This, you know, we had seen SC, especially last year, when they'd get punched in the mouth, they would miraculously come back from the dead in the fourth quarter, and people hated it, right? Like, remember that UCLA game that was wild and insane, and, like, people were mad at that game? Because even though SC won on the last play of the game, people were mad because how dare this team win on the last play instead of the, you know, early in the first quarter, apparently? But you remember, like... The team pulled games out of their ass, and people were frustrated, rightfully so, that it always had to turn to that, right? So now this team gets in situations that are surely worse than they were in last year, but not too dissimilar. This game tonight was like very similar to games from last year, except if it was last year's team, they would have pulled this one out. This year's team did not, right? So, USC not responding and SC falling down 20 plus points to now their fourth opponent in the last, you know, X amount of games. Is this a sign of being without Clay Helton? Or is this a sign of, this is what it's like having an interim head coach, not having a head coach, your season, it, like the administration is, athletic department has basically told the team that the season's over because they fired the head coach midseason, all this stuff. Like, doesn't this have more to do with, yeah, like the season has got canned.
No, I think
more so than you're without Clay Helton. Like, no, you're without head coach.
The season in 2015 was canned and the season in 2013 was canned. What I'm saying is, yes, this is what life with an interim coach looks like. USC didn't get to experience that the last two times they had an interim head coach because they had the ultimate man motivator in Ed Orgeron. And they had a guy that guys wanted to run through a brick wall for,
right,
in Clay Helton. And this is what life is like when you don't have somebody. And Dante Williams is an incredible recruiter, but he's proving that this is over his head as far as head coaching, the ability to keep a team together and to sort out those clock issues or sort out whatever it is. Yeah, I'm not trying to get into the specifics.
Blame Dante Williams for this.
No. I'm not blaming Dante Williams. I'm just saying, like, this is what happens when you don't have somebody
who is an
Ed Orgeron or a Clay Helton in that sense. So, like, give him his due. Again,
Orgeron is the patron saint of interim head coach.
Yes. I mean, he's literally an interim coach right now. Again,
they did lose though. They did lose today.
Yeah. But I mean, either way, I just think that it's very frustrating to see a USC team not feel competitive in a way that I don't feel that USC has felt uncompetitive in the past. And I think that's what is causing me to shut down so thoroughly on this season is, like, next week USC plays Arizona, an Arizona team that has not had a win yet. I mean, I'm not saying that Jed Fish is going to succeed in Arizona, but every time I watch Arizona play, there's that little spark of these guys kind of buy into their coach, and I could see them giving USC a game now.
Do they vaguely? Now, this is all, take this all with a massive grain of salt. But is there a little bit of, like, 2014/15-ish Colorado,
yeah,
with Arizona, and that you're
where,
like,
they're bad, but, like, they kind of have something.
They're bad, but you're like, they kind of make you earn it. Like,
yeah, they're gonna make you earn it, and that's exactly the way to frame Arizona. And, you know, people were talking a couple weeks ago about, well, is USC gonna be bowl eligible? I was like, yeah, I think they will. There's too much talent on this team to not be, but USC came out of a bye week and didn't look like they'd fixed a single thing.
Right.
And now I'm looking at it going, like, I can't even guarantee that USC will beat Arizona.
Well, okay, so next week, is that going to be the SC has had a problem with these streaks.
Yeah.
They you know, Stanford had never beaten Clay Helton at the Coliseum. They beat him.
Yeah, Oregon
Utah had never won at the Coliseum. They did. Oregon State had not won at the Coliseum since 1960. They did. Arizona has not beaten anyone with the pulse in years.
Yeah. I think it was like a 16-game losing streak for Arizona. Like, yeah.
I mean, if USC has a pulse.
Well, but I'm genuinely worried about USC now because I don't see a USC team with this talent. And,
but you see, here's... And then it goes back to, if you only watch games where SC... Like, I want this mental experiment. I want someone to show SC film to somebody and show only USC's offensive possessions outside of the red zone. And that's the only thing that you see. And then, like, and watch the entire season outside the red zone. That's the only thing you see. And then tell me, okay, now, how many wins does this team have? What's their record?
What's their average score?
Take the score bug off the screen, the whole thing.
Yeah.
I'm very curious what people would think. Because, like, you know, I'm not going to say that SC doesn't look, the offense, like, from an eye test perspective, doesn't look infallible.
The offense is very stop-start, but when they're stopped, they move.
Yeah, but they don't look infallible between the 20s. It still looks difficult.
I feel like every time I looked up today...
Every time I looked up today,
USC was at the 15.
Yeah.
They were moving the ball.
Yeah.
So,
and Notre Dame was too.
Yeah. Oh, and absolutely. And this could have been a shootout. And again, we've been saying for years, just give us Big 12 bad and we'd be a lot happier.
Yeah.
But USC doesn't give us Big 12 bad. They give us bad offense and bad defense.
The thing that I think is the most frustrating part of all this. SC went
USC
out.
Could give up 30 points a game,
SC
and I would not care
out,
if they were scoring 35.
They got an air raid offensive coordinator, and they didn't even become Big 12 bad. Like, at least if you were Big 12 bad, like, it would just, it would be something.
That's all I'm saying. I don't want to be like harsher on the offense than I am the defense, but I would not give a crap if USC gave up 35 points a game if the offense scored 35 more often than not. Well, and they don't do that. So I just.
Last thing to mention here before we wrap up.
Can I undercut you just for 1 second here?
Yeah.
Can we mention the Dante Williams quote that's an all-timer?
You're on Twitter and I'm not, yeah.
Have you seen this yet then?
No.
Okay, after the game, Dante Williams said he doesn't feel like USC lost that game. They just ran out of time.
Is he talking the first half or the second?
It's just one of those quotes where you're like, bruh. What are you, no,
okay,
stop it.
So,
no. I like our buddy Kenny from Traveler Hits Thursdays, rest in peace, Traveler Hits Thursdays, said, I also don't feel like I'm not a millionaire. I just ran out of money. Like, yeah, that's... I don't feel like I didn't have enough money to pay rent.
I'm always sympathetic to that quote in general. I think, if I told you that, like, my philosophical look at sports, where I've always said, like, isn't it a little arbitrary the way that we just say that a football game is 60 minutes and an NBA game is 48 minutes and this game is this minute, and like, it just seems arbitrary. Like, why is it this team we have decided they have surely won because they were ahead after this amount of time versus that amount of time?
Because just like, why do we have the lines of bounds where they are? Well, because are the rules of the game.
No, I get that. But
within the parameters of the game, you have to be the one that's ahead at that particular time stamp.
Right. But like, so like a shootout, I'm absolutely sympathetic. So like, the last team
with the ball wins.
Yes. Yeah. Or like a basketball game in which every team is making buckets, going back and forth, back and forth. Well, someone was just bound to have the ball last, and it just seems like cruel and unfair that it wasn't you if it wasn't you.
Yeah.
So I'm sympathetic to that idea, but you scored 16 points.
Yeah.
You don't get to make that argument.
No.
Not after this game.
No. Just. My point, again, is that it wasn't just because this is now a Clay Helton apologist podcast. It's like, it's not just Clay Helton who says the cringiest bullshit after games. Like,
well, I mean, like I've always said, that you don't mind cringy bullshit if you like
the person.
If you like the person or the team is winning. If you don't like the person or the team is not winning, then you don't like the stuff. That's usually how it works. But anyways, we got to talk F1. F1 is here. They're in America.
It doesn't work for me, though, because the whole reason I can watch F1 is because it comes on before I have to start work. And that is not the case for Sunday's race in Austin.
It's so funny to me because I listen to all these British podcasts and they're always like, how do we get the Americans into Formula One? Well, we know that they watch Netflix and all this stuff and then blah, blah, blah. But then... you know, the race is this week, and I feel like almost everyone that I know is like, well, actually, yeah, it's at a normal time. It's at noon Pacific, but I can't even watch this week because I've got life going on.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the whole.
I only watch Formula One because it's on in my off hours.
Yeah. The whole appeal of Premier League soccer and Formula One in a weird, weird way is that it's on before anything else is happening in my life. So like if Premier League games were on in prime time, it would be a hell of a lot harder to watch them because I work weekends. I work on Sundays. Every Sunday I work 1 to 9. So like if it's on from 1 to 9, I'm screwed because I'm working. So the appeal of morning Sunday sort of sporting events is that it's the morning on Sunday, so I'm not working. Or it's the morning on Saturday, so I'm not working. Like, the fact that this is on at noon is a big bummer for me.
See, I just
I start work at 1.
Quali was at 2 p.m.
Yeah, and I was working.
So you know what I did?
You slept in until 2.
I slept in until 1:30.
Yeah.
So I'm like, if I sleep in until, like, super late, like, until 1:30 in the afternoon, you know, then, like, that'll basically be as if it's a morning thing.
Yeah, except with a full night's sleep.
Yeah, because I went to bed at like 4 last night. Yeah.
Yeah, you do that.
Cool. Well, that'll wrap up this thing.
I'm excited for turn one.
I think we're turning the corner, so hopefully we'll be able to pot this week.
I feel...
We just made it through 48 minutes. I mean, you guys, maybe if you have good ears, could notice that we've taken like, you know, like 9...
Several coughing breaks.
9 coughing breaks, yeah. So I could... cough my lung up.
Yeah.
And you could cough.
Yeah.
But
throat's feeling a little dry.
But we've made it this far.
But I will say, my boss messaged me on Friday and was like, good to see you on. Like, I hope you're feeling better. And I was like, I had a moment of like sitting back and thinking like, oh my gosh, yeah, I do feel like I feel significantly better. I'd got a month where I'd forgotten what it felt like to feel semi-human and not completely just totally out of it, and like that's good. And I'm not even like 100% because I'm still dealing with the stupid allergy cough that's just annoying as all hell. But at least it's just annoying and not like debilitating. Yeah.
And then there's me, where I am Mr.
Post-viral.
Cough. No, but I'm talking about like I am perpetually someone who has imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
Constantly worried what other people think.
Uh-huh.
Super thin skin. You know, big time for sure. Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, but like, I feel so bad that like, you know, last year, I feel like we dropped the ball with the pod because we got sick. And then here we go this year.
Oh my gosh, like, you have no idea.
It's a sucky feeling.
Speaking of, like, yeah, it's... Because
like,
I think
people are going to think that we're hypochondriacs, yeah, or that we're lazy, that we suck.
It's like a form of damn imposter syndrome or whatever, but like, on Sunday, I was...
You're going to think we're lying.
Last Sunday, it was the worst day I have ever felt in my life in terms of being ill. Like, Sunday was the worst day. I was... completely just knocked on my butt like I had been hit by a truck. It was just like bad. And I messaged my boss and I was like, I swear to God, like I cannot catch a break. I've caught this stomach thing that my family has been passing around and I'm having to off to take another sick day. And like, I'm sitting there just thinking to myself, like my boss thinks I'm making this shit up because I have now had to take 3 Sunday, Mondays combos in a row off because of being sick. And like, he thinks I'm just like partying too hard or something like that on Saturday and like hung over every Sunday or something like that. And it's like, I swear to God, no, we are so lame. Like, that's the sad thing, is that like I'm the last person who would do that. The thing that wears me out on Saturday is a full day of college football. Like, but you know me, like I agonize about taking sick days. I agonize about taking vacation.
Yeah.
So like I'm going through this sick patch and then like my family wants to arrange this like vacation thing. And I'm like, I'm going to have to put in for like a vacation day after I've just had a month where I've like used up all of my sick days. And you are owed vacation days. Take your damn vacation days. And it's like, I just feel like my skin just like curls up at the idea of like, but what if my boss thinks I'm like letting the team down or something like that? Like that's a big problem.
It's gonna be funny when our bosses listen to this.
Yeah, when our bosses listen to this and go like, yeah, you guys are letting the team down. What the hell? You're letting the podcast listeners down. Yeah.
Anyways, we're letting you guys down and we feel bad. Seriously, I feel bad about it.
Yeah. We got messages about like there's no over under this week, and I was like, we didn't do a Notre Dame preview. I'm sorry.
We're terrible people.
I know, and we are going to do that big coaching extravaganza.
I don't know when.
At this point, I don't care about
hypothetically. I just want to throw this out here. Throw this idea out there. Okay, we are a team. We are obviously credentialed covering USC football. I'll be there next week when SC plays Arizona at the Coliseum, health permitting. We are covering this team. At the same time, we get so many tweets and emails and all that stuff about how I just can't even bother to watch games anymore and all this stuff. And, you know, I think that one of the interesting discussion points about this team going forward is talking about the team going forward versus the little in-season things that you have to cover. And I think it's very frustrating, especially since we just had the opportunity to talk about big picture stuff in the bye week and we weren't able to do it. But like, I almost wonder, what if we turn this podcast for the rest of the season into just talking big picture stuff?
What if we stopped talking about USC games and talked more about like Cincinnati games or Penn State games because then we're just talking about James Franklin and Luke Fickell and all that kind of stuff.
More so, I'm saying like, what if we just went into talking about big picture stuff? And then part of me is like, so you want to embrace the off season already? Like the off season is already too long. Like,
well, I'm going to put it out there. I don't know that we should spend very much time previewing the Arizona game. I think we should just lay our cards on the table do our head coaching extravaganza.
Do we instead come up with a different style of preview episodes for the last five games here, where they're not as detailed as they've been, because usually you should see the amount of research that we usually end up doing for preview
episodes. Our rundowns for preview episodes are multiple pages long,
but notoriously like 7 to 10 pages of notes and stuff like that we put together. I don't know that people care enough to hear us talk about.
I sure don't care enough about Arizona.
7 to 10 pages worth.
Not Arizona specifically. I don't care enough about the Arizona game, because if USC loses that game, well then, USC's been embarrassing. USC wins that game, it literally does not matter.
We still have to cover it. So I don't know. We're talking way too much. Way too much inside baseball, and being way too honest on this podcast.
It's fine. People like inside baseball.
No, is people even still listening?
Somebody might. There are some degenerate fans out there, and I say that with all the love in my heart, because I too am a degenerate. I watched that whole damn football game tonight. Just like, you know, we're all sick. We're all sick in the head. And let's all embrace that idea. And so there must be people who are...
Well, good news. Hold on. I'm just pulling it up. The Dodgers are down to their last strike, it looked like.
Oh, good.
Thank God.
No offense to Dodger fans. I love you all. Like, I feel for you. But also, as an Angels fan, I can't live in a world where the Dodgers get to another World Series. It's just not fun for me. The Braves are my last hope to get the... Like, I'm full bore rooting against the Astros at this point. So if the Dodgers got to the World Series, I'd have to root for them against the Astros. I can't live...
Wait, sorry, just two outs. Two outs.
Okay. Can't live that way. Full speed ahead with the Braves. Sorry, Dodgers fans, but like, this is the thing that's going to save my night if this follows through.
Yeah. You love to see it. Yeah. You love to see it. Yeah.
Michael wearing his Cubs franchise
like the Dodgers. So, yeah. All right. Thanks for listening, as always. We love you guys. And here, if you're still listening, send us your thoughts. What do you want the podcast to be for the last five games of the year? What do you want to hear from us? Until then, email address randomtryoutfanside.com. Phone number 213-373-1872. Alicia, final word?
The final word is... Can that be...
Oh, round it out. It's over. The Braves won the pennant.
The final word is go Braves.
Go Braves, yes.
Yep.
All right, see ya.
See ya.